Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 23rd, 2016. A new report by Human Rights Watch confirms that South Sudan army and rebel forces killed and raped civilians in Yei.
During the course of our stay in Yei, we were able to confirm pretty much all of this. So more precisely, I mean, we found that the government forces who are still in control of the city of Yei had been arresting and detaining scores of young men on the pretense that they may be rebels.
And inmates at a Juba prison learn skills to earn a living after they get out.
You've got to accept me to be out. And I know even I will make my own saloon to teach a lot of people to know how the benefiting of saloon, because many people of outside there, they don't know this saloon is nonsense. But I know by now, saloon's having a lot of things.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Human Rights Watch says both government and rebel forces in South Sudan have killed, raped and arbitrarily arrested and abducted civilians in Yei, in former Central Equatorial State. Human Rights Watch says attacks on civilians have intensified since July following fighting in and around Juba. Jonathan Pennell is a researcher in Human Rights Watch Africa Division. He recently visited Yei. He spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about conditions in Yei town.
Yei has become very much of a town under occupation. There are soldiers everywhere with AK-47, with RPGs. One walks around and never really knows what may happen. You know, we've had mornings waking up the sound of mortar shelling just a few kilometers outside of town. It's definitely a very tense situation for what used to be one of South Sudan's most stable towns, a place where people were sending their kids to study, a place where all the 64 ethnicities of South Sudan were living along together.
Now, Human Rights Watch makes some serious allegations regarding both government soldiers and rebels in Yei. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so we visited Yei because we were hearing about a lot of atrocious stories coming from refugees who had fled Yei and the regions around Yei to Uganda. We were hearing about cases of killings and rapes and arrests, arbitrary arrests and detentions. And during the course of our stay in Yei, we were able to confirm pretty much all of this. So more precisely, I mean, we found that the government forces who are still in control of the city of Yei had been arresting and detaining scores of young men on the pretense that they may be rebels and had been subjecting them to horrific detention conditions with very little food, very little water, with a number of detainees as well who unfortunately died as a result of those horrendous conditions. We also found that soldiers had killed a number of civilians. Soldiers went into certain areas of town and forcefully displaced civilians, and now civilians who venture back into those areas, some of them have unfortunately been killed, women have been raped. But that's only for the government side, because rebels around Yei have also committed abuses against civilians. We've heard of cases of rape of women, often on the basis of ethnicity, with the rebels targeting Dinka civilians, but also Sudanese refugees who are seen as being on the side of the government. There has been a horrific attack, unfortunately, on October 8th on a convoy of civilians that was fleeing Yei to Juba. Most of them Dinka, most of them women and children, and, you know, rebels attacked one of the trucks and then set it on fire, killing dozens, mostly women and children.
About how many people did Human Rights Watch interview for this report?
So we interviewed about 70 victims and witnesses and people from the local civil society in Yei.
You visited Yei in October. Have you received any updates on the situation since?
Yes, the situation unfortunately continues to deteriorate. A journalist from the Associated Press reported just recently that there had been a massacre just a mere few days after we left. 11 farmers were coming back from the market in Yei and were captured by gunmen, unclear whether they were government or rebels, then brought to a hut, killed, and then the hut was burnt.
Is Human Rights Watch calling for any specific actions?
We think an arms embargo should be put in place. Now, the United States has announced recently that it was going to circulate a draft proposal for an arms embargo at the UN Security Council. We're still seeing a little bit of reluctance on the part of some of the council members. We've also been advocating for individual sanctions, sanctioning of commanders that are seen as responsible for some of those horrendous acts, but that will not provide justice. So sanctions are a temporary measure, but we've been calling for a hybrid court to be established in the first place to investigate and prosecute the war crimes and international crimes that we've seen in South Sudan since 2013. And the African Union is supposed to take charge of that. And despite receiving funding from the U.S. and other countries, unfortunately, we're seeing that the African Union is not moving nearly as fast as we would like it to do. So we're calling for all interested parties to continue to put pressure on the African Union to make sure that this court sees the light of day soon enough.
Jonathan Penno is a researcher in Human Rights Watch Africa Division. He spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. The latest Human Rights Watch report detailing abuses by South Sudan Army and rebel soldiers against civilians in Yei was met with skepticism by SPLA spokesman Roy Kwong. Roy tells Ayen Bior he has not seen the report nor has seen any evidence that crimes were committed by his soldiers against civilians in Yei.
I'm yet to see the report that they have released. However, I would like to make it very clear that this is not a new allegation. They have been accusing SPLA from time to time of alleged atrocities, and we have been challenging them to give us the evidence so that we could go against those who are involved in the reported atrocities. Having said that, in the last 2 to 3 months, we have been reporting about atrocities that are being committed against civilians by the rebels. So I'm surprised to hear that the government is being accused as well.
There are South Sudanese witnesses and South Sudanese victims themselves who have come forth and said, these are the crimes that have been committed against me and my family. Do their voices not matter?
Their voices do matter. But of course, without us hearing from them so that we go against their abuses, it would be difficult for us to take the accusation at face value.
What attempts has the government made to hear some of the voices of the victims who are crying and saying that their own government is attacking them?
In July, in Wau, some SPLA soldiers were accused of having killed a couple. When we did our investigation, we found out that they did just that. We took very drastic measures against them. We also did the same to SPLA soldiers who were accused of having committed illegal acts against our civilians in Juba. We sentenced some of our own soldiers to death by firing squad. We dismissed some from military service, and we sentenced some to long-term prison sentences. These were the steps we took after establishing that indeed some of our own servicemen, took part in committing atrocities.
Among the soldiers of the SPLA, what is the protocol of acting with civilians? Because again, as this report points out, it seems as if there is a trend of violence targeting civilians.
I would say no. I don't concur with that finding or with that conclusion. What we have been saying is that, yes, from time to time we heard reports of some of our servicemen being accused of doing this and that, and the serious accusations we heard were in Wau, like I said earlier on, and in Juba here. And we took good steps meant at ensuring that civilians are not targeted by SPLA soldiers. We took some good steps, and the steps are still, the preventive mechanisms we put in place are still in place, and they have not been violated. They have not been violated since July. What we are saying is there are violations by SPLA soldiers, and those who are having the evidence of them, let them come forward. There is no trend from our side. There were isolated cases here and there, and those cases were sufficiently addressed.
That was SPLA spokesman Lul Roy Kwong speaking to Ayen Bior earlier today from Juba. Hundreds of inmates at Juba's central prison who have just completed a one-year-long skills training program say they now feel they will be able to earn a living once they leave the prison. South Sudan's interior minister says the government will also recruit trained inmates into the National Prison Service or police units once the inmates are released. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Juba.
Inmates sing joyfully during a graduation ceremony at Juba Central Prison yesterday, marking the end of the skills training. The inmates learn electrical installation, wiring, carpentry, and tailoring, among other skills. 23-year-old Akello Sharon was imprisoned for more than a year ago after being convicted for manslaughter. Yesterday, she graduated along with about 30 other women who passed tailoring course. Sharon says she plans to sew various designs for both men and women when she leaves prison.
I know that it will help me because now I know how to short clothes, even to how to make the measurement. So I know if I go out of the prison, I will not leave this work here. I will go and open my shop. I start even making my own clothes. Even some people who wanted me to teach them, I can manage to teach them.
At first, Sharon says she found prison life to be very depressive. But once she started attending tailoring classes, she learned how to cope up with hard condition in prison. 27-year-old Christine Amoy is in prison for failing to pay back a loan to a friend. She was trained in hairdressing and physiotherapy. Amoy says she chose hairdressing because she believes it is marketable trade.
If by God's will, if God accepts me to be out, and I know even I will make my own salon to teach a lot of people to know how the benefiting of salon, because many people of outside there, they don't know this salon is nonsense. But I know by now, salon's having a lot of things.
30-year-old Taban James, an SPLA soldier who was convicted for defiling a child, was trained in electrical work. James has been selected as an instructor for the next batch of trainees. He says even though he is a soldier, he prefers to do electrical work when he leaves prison so he can spend the rest of his life close to his family.
I'm now instructing the second group, so I'm very happy. If I went out, I would be doing my own work. I'm very happy I'm going to leave that uniforms and I will work by my own.
The United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, sponsored the training. Kamil Kamaluddin is the UNDP country director in South Sudan. He says his agency will continue supporting development projects like this one to foster peace and stability in the country.
Generally, development does not like crisis. A crisis disrupts development. And that is why in everything that UNDP does, we have always advocated for peace as a fundamental to enabling development. And without peace, it is very difficult to move the pace of development as fast as the potentials of the country will allow.
Kamaluddin says the UNDP spent $500,000 to set up and equip the vocational training center at Juba Central Prison and has plans to create similar facilities for prisons in Rumbek, Wau, and Awil. Speaking in Arabic, South Sudan Interior Minister Michael Chenjek is encouraging South Sudanese youth involved in armed groups to lay down their guns and to learn vocational skills so they can help develop the country.
From today onwards, you have become very important people in the family of the prison service. You are no longer going to be treated as prisoners. Just wait for your time and process that is being done for your release. Be patient and maintain discipline until that time comes.
Cheng Jack vowed to employ the inmates in the prison service or South Sudan police units once they are set free. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese authorities and UN agencies start a new law enforcement project for Darfur. That report is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should you take advice from someone just because they are an elder?
Not necessarily, but many people believe that we have to do that. But it is not. I think that 90% we can take it, but not every time. Because sometimes they are wrong. Many times they are right, but sometimes they are wrong.
You can take advice from elder you want to care about the ideas, which kind of ideas they give me. So you have to care about and choose the best one.
Yeah, one side I can accept it, but also I try to think, because so many old people are not educated. She can be wrong, and also she can be right. So you have to check a good answer.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to VOA. United Nations officials in Sudan and the Sudanese Ministry of Justice and International Cooperation have agreed to undertake a joint program to promote the rule of law and access to justice in Darfur. Officials say if the program is implemented, it will provide technical support to police, judiciary, and correctional authorities to reduce impunity and resolve conflict over land and natural resources. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Khartoum.
A memorandum of understanding to promote the rule of law was signed this week by Sudanese officials and 10 UN agency officials representing UNICEF, UNHCR, and the UN peacekeeping mission in Darfur known as UNAMID, among others. For the past few years, UNAMID was tasked with ensuring that there is rule of law in IDP camps in Darfur. The new project provides for shared responsibility to protect civilians in Darfur by Sudanese authorities and the UN mission. Marta Reuters is the UN resident coordinator and UNDP representative in Sudan.
We will be trying to work with the government to reestablish the criminal justice chain, that is to say, police, justice and corrections in specific areas, pilot areas, and it will help to address impunity, to facilitate, we hope, the return of IDPs, and to bring about the security framework for that purpose.
Reuters says the joint program will improve the lives of the people of Darfur.
This program is really dedicated to help them to achieve results, to lower criminality, to enhance security, to improve justice, and to improve also the enjoyment of human rights across all of Darfur.
Binto Keita is UNAMID's deputy joint special representative. She says the new program will help her mission protect civilians more effectively.
We hope we will help maintain stability in the pilot areas and contribute to the protection of civilians, including returnee population, women and children, and facilitate the implementation of the Doha document for peace in Darfur. UNAMID will continue to work with national authorities to monitor, evaluate, and strengthen the capacity of customary court judges to resolve and mediate conflicts over land and over resources.
Keita says by bringing in the expertise and resources of the entire UN team in Sudan, UNAMID will be able to overcome some of the challenges the mission has struggled with for so long.
This joint program focuses on strengthening institutional capacity of the justice, correction, and police system. By doing so, it will allow to effectively respond to challenges of access to justice, while at the same time mitigating conflicts, impunity, and lawlessness.
Usman Ahmed Fadl is the Sudanese acting minister for international cooperation. Fadl says his government will fully support UN efforts to prop up institutions of rule of law in Darfur.
By signing the program, we are committing ourselves, that is government of Sudan, to be a partner, and we will provide all assistance for successful implementation of the significant program in the state of Darfur.
Reuters says the program is a huge step to transform Darfur from being a crisis region to a peaceful area. She says the program will also improve governance of land and curtail competition for natural resources, which she says is one of the main sources of conflict in Darfur. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
A court in the southern Malawi district of Sanje has sentenced a 45-year-old man to 2 years in jail for having unprotected sex with bereaved widows and young girls as part of the area's traditional custom of women cleansing. Malawi police arrested Eric Aniva in July following orders from Malawian President Peter Mutharika. President Mutharika was reacting to concerns that Aniva might have infected the women with HIV. Lamek Masina attended the sentencing and has this report for VOA from Malawi.
People from Unsanje braved the hot weather Tuesday to attend a court ruling for a man some of them were hiring and paying to have sex with their relatives. Eric Aniva earlier told both local and international media that he slept with more than 100 young girls and widows during an initiation ceremony known as Kusasa Fumbi, or removing dust and fisi or hyena. Fisi is a traditional custom in southern Malawi. A man is hired and paid to have sex with widows, allegedly to exorcise evil spirits that may bring death to the bereaved family. Kusasa Fumbi is another custom practiced in the area. Hiring a man to sleep with young girls who have reached puberty in order to prepare them for married life. Principal Magistrate Innocent Nebi said Aniva violated Malawi's 2013 Gender Equality Act, which outlaws harmful traditional practices. He therefore sentenced Aniva to 24 months in jail for the first count of engaging in harmful practices, and another 10-month jail for attempting to engage in harmful cultural practices. Aniva's lawyer, Michael Gobajipeta, said he would appeal.
We feel there are a lot of errors that have been made, which have occasioned the actual miscarriage of justice. Despite all the allegations that were made as to there being hundreds of women that were violated, I mean, not even 10, not even 5 were brought to court to testify to say this guy violated us or forced us to do this.
The verdict has attracted anger and resentment among people in Nsanje. Dean Welchingoma is one of them. He said the sentencing of Aniva will never stop them from performing their casual practices.
Mina aboma akana ganiza bomofa sabuno bwino kunena unena kuti.
He says what the government should have done is to teach them to reform their culture. He says, for example, if the government just advised them that they should first go for HIV testing before they engage in any practice that involves sex. Nsanje district is rich in practices that require men to sleep with women. Besides Fisi and Kusasa Fumbi, there are 4 more casual practices that require men sleeping with women. One of them is Dwande, in which man is hired to sleep with a single mother when her newly born baby is 6 months old. Village elders say the aim is to keep the baby away from disease. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Nsanje, Malawi.
Imatong state officials gave away hundreds of bags of food and fresh vegetables yesterday at a local demonstration farm with the hope of reducing food shortage across the area. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit, additional food harvested from the farm will be sold at affordable prices in local markets.
Scores of residents sang, "Never again shall we flee to Uganda because of food shortages," in the local Lokwa language, while others performed traditional dances to celebrate Green Horizon Farm's first harvest in Bur village, some 20 kilometers north of the state capital. The 82-hectare farm was established in May with the goal of ending food shortages across Imotong estate. The farm, co-owned by the state government and Israel, trains locals to produce food for their own families and surplus for the market. Yesterday, state officials displayed bags of maize, corn, sorghum and millet along with carrots and eggplant, all harvested from the farm. The food was packed in 50 and 10 kilogram Green Horizon Farm branded bags ready to be sold in the local market. Local resident James Atias hopes Green Horizon's first harvest leads to many more.
Quite a long time, something has never happened in this area. We wish that Green Horizon continue with this spirit and expand more so that people at the area and as an inhabitant to benefit from this food which are given to us. We want this food which are being produced within this area to reduce the higher purchasing from the market, not to be higher, that is to be low, such that the people will benefit from it.
Speaking in Arabic, Lily Victor says the food produced at Green Horizon Farm gives her hope that she can remain in South Sudan rather than flee to refugee camps in Uganda or Kenya in search of food and security.
As a mother, I am happy for the food produced, and instead of importing things from outside, we can have them here. And this will help us a lot, even though we have difficulties affording the high food prices in the market and the killings on the roads. If we have these food items here, our children will not suffer.
Randrir, chief agronomist at the Green Horizon Farm, says the food will be sold in local markets, lower prices to help cut down on imported goods.
We are going to expand the activity. We are going to start CCF activity with the communities, which is a shared farming with all communities of Imatong. We are going to implement the Green Garden project.
Beginning next week, Drill says the farm will introduce an irrigation technique that will allow farmers to produce vegetables on a large scale, even in the dry season.
As you can see, we have proven to ourselves first and to all the concerned that we can produce quality products of all kinds here in this farm. And we are going to expand shortly to more crops and increase the velocity of the project.
Speaking in Arabic, Imatong State Governor Tiso Loluke Manir is encouraging locals to produce fast maturing crops to help feed families in the area.
We should grow rice too in these swampy areas of Iyodo and Kineti. Why should we wait for rice from China? Why should it come from China? Why should it come from Indonesia? And yet, we can grow it here.
To reach Green Horizon Farm is one of several food security and agricultural development projects undertaken by the Israel-based global company to fight food shortages and provide fresh food for South Sudanese at affordable prices. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turit.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We still take you back to Turit with the song Nani Ongere by Colonel Mido.
Nani olo ngere?
We have been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Nani Ongere. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thank you for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Please join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Nani olo til, nani olo ngere, nani olo til, nani olo ngere.